Ah, the calming sounds of nature.
When you hear this simple term nature, what images are conjured up in your mind? I know for myself, anytime I hear that word, I'm brought back to my childhood, with memories of my friends and I hiking throughout the mountains in northern New Jersey, carefully making our way through the forest, taking care not to trip on an exposed tree root or rock until we finally reached a scenic lookout point, only for us to retrace our steps back down that same winding trail. When I asked this question to my parents, they described a similar scene of a humble forest, a row of trees outlining a swirling stream with a tall mountain range in the background. Even when searching online the term nature, you would get flooded with images containing these elements. But what if nature is not just limited to a forest, and instead that it influences our whole world and how we interact with it? Hello, my name is Christina Villa, and welcome to the Inner Element Podcast, dedicated to exploring the intricacies of nature. Nature can be seen in everything we interact with, from inspiring scientific discoveries, food production techniques, and modern inventions, to even being referenced in our religions, pieces of art, and shaping our own personal experiences. Through the class, 10 Ways to Know Nature, my peers and I have grown an appreciation of our surroundings, and have begun to see nature in a different light than just wilderness. Instead, this term has become more of a concept that allows us to see our role in the world around us. Our discussions based on the work of Henry David Thoreau, our visit to Storm King Art Center, exploration of a lab in the Colton Chapel, and being one with the campus here at Lafayette College have made us more aware of our impact on nature and where we reside within it. There are many ways that we as a society can connect with nature, and I ask that you reflect on your own connection and learn new ways you can see nature's manifestation in your everyday life. With that being said, I would like to introduce our first group, Claire and Wyatt. They will be discussing how our personal experiences play a role in how we see and interact with nature and our surroundings.
When you hear the word nature, what do you think of?
When I hear nature, I think of generally being outside, feeling the wind, the sun, like seeing all the trees and the animals.
I think of being at peace.
I think of grass and trees and bushes and plants and insects.
Trees and leaves and just like being outside.
I think of like beauty, scenery, and like pretty landscapes like mountains and valleys.
Hi, I'm Wyatt Tuckey.
And I'm Claire Palumbo.
Today, we will be talking about personal experience in nature.
Nature plays a big role in our lives. It can influence how we feel, what we do, and how we see the world around us.
When we talk about personal experience in nature, we mean how each of us has come to understand and appreciate the natural world. Our main point is to understand how different personal experiences shape our understanding of nature.
Now that we've heard what nature means to others, what does it mean to you, Wyatt?
Well, I've had many different experiences with nature since I was a child. When I was younger, I'd help my grandma with her garden. I'd help her plant flowers, fertilize plants, and pick fruits and vegetables. She'd teach me the names of the plants and show me how to take care of them. As I got older, my dad taught me how to hunt and fish. I'd go with him when I was younger, but I didn't really appreciate it until a few years ago. I really started to enjoy being outside and spending time with my dad. I also picked up skiing a few years ago. I love to go with my friends, and we normally ski all day. It's a great time, and it allows me to appreciate what nature has to offer. So what about you, Claire? What do you like to do in nature?
Well, when I was younger, I also used to help out in the garden. My aunt would let me water her plants, and she would teach me about gardening. My mother and I went on walks and visit parks daily so I could experience what nature had to offer in the city. Then we moved out to the suburbs. Actually, one of the main reasons for moving was because my mom wanted me to experience nature in a yard and be surrounded by wilderness. When I got older, I would go on walks with my mother and her dog. I would love to take in what nature had to offer. Now, sometimes I go on walks by myself and sit on the grass, focusing my attention to certain aspects of nature. It's really soothing and makes me feel really relaxed and refreshed.
Now that we have shared our personal experiences in nature, we wanted to talk to someone who may have a little bit of a different experience in nature.
Today we have invited a special guest who's another first-year student at Lafayette. Hey Josh, would you like to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, for sure. Hi, Claire. Hi, Wyatt. Thanks for having me on your podcast today. I'm Josh George. I'm from LA, and I'm happy to answer your questions today.
Hi, Josh. Nice to see you. We have a few questions to ask you. First one is, what do you like to do outside in nature?
So LA and Southern California as a whole, really, is just home to a really diverse environment where a bunch of different topographies all meet in the same relative area. You know, we have these wonderful hills and beautiful mountains that people just love to go hiking on. We have beaches, and I personally love going on walks and biking along the coast. It's such a beautiful thing.
California has a lot of natural disasters. Do these disasters affect your view towards nature at all?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right there too. California experiences a lot of natural disasters. We frequently get earthquakes, and that's just because of all the fault lines that intersect and really just meet up in our state. We're on the Ring of Fire, which is just an area known for its frequent earthquakes and seismic activity. We also have mudslides and flash floods. It's in our rain season. The mudslides in particular are caused by burn areas from our wildfires, which are just weak, right? The area is weak and burnt. It causes a lot of issues in LA, especially in our rain season. We also deal with wildfires, which are increasingly worse as time goes on. Well, these all impact my views on nature, as I see nature as a little bit more tentative in the sense that we as a species need to take care of it more, as a lot of these natural disasters are worsened by climate change and human-based activities.
Well, it seems like wildfires have a significant impact on the county of LA.
Yeah. Would you share some of those experiences with us?
Wildfires have a huge impact on LA. Typically during our dry season, we get a couple of these huge fires, which are just fueled on by the brush, the dry climate, and the high winds we have in the area. They cause evacuation orders due to the falling ash, and it's the wildfire itself. I personally have been evacuated twice, and it is a scary ordeal. You know, you're wondering where you're going to go. Is my house going to be there? Is my community going to be the same? It's a really scary experience. Another experience I have with these wildfires comes when, in the famous LA wildfires of January, I went out to one carrying masks and water bottles, hoping to give them to the first responders. But to my surprise, there were none. Instead, I went around house to house in this community right in front of the fire, trying to get people out, giving them masks to deal with the ash and everything. It was an experience. It really taught me how it's important to take care of your community and especially in the face of crisis.
Wow, Josh, thank you for sharing your experiences with us today. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast.
We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come talk with us.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Wyatt. Thanks for having me on this podcast. I hope the audience got a glimpse of what nature in Southern California is like. And also, I hope they got a glimpse of what it's like when nature doesn't cooperate with us and the importance of taking care of our environment. A lot of the natural disasters I mentioned are caused by human-based activity. You know, it's preventable. That said, have a good day, y'all. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
We talked to Josh because he has a different perspective on nature than we do. He also shows us and everyone what it means to live in and actually be present in the outcomes of nature.
While we see nature as mostly peaceful, Josh sees it as peaceful and harmful.
We focused on how we were a part of nature and how we enjoyed it. We talked about using nature for hobbies and connection. This reminds me of Henry David Thoreau. He was an author, naturalist, and leading member of the 19th century literary, social, and religious movement known as Transcendentalism. Thoreau is best remembered for his two-year venture on the shores of Walden Pond in his hometown of Concord, Massachusetts from July 4, 1845 to September 6, 1847. Thoreau spent a decent amount of his time out in the wild to show the audience what it actually means to be out there experiencing and living in nature. He tries to understand if a person could live cheaply and simply, free from the pressure of industrial society, to better find the essential truths of existence. This led to the publication of his book, Walden, in 1854.
Another person who has a strong connection with nature is Robin Wall Kimmerer. She views nature as a gift, and her basic example of these are strawberries. She says gifts from the earth or from each other establish a particular relationship, an obligation of sorts to give, to receive, and to reciprocate. She believes wild strawberries fit the definition of a gift, but grocery store berries do not, and it is the relationship between the producer and consumer that changes everything. Her personal experience in nature shows us the gifts that nature has to offer. She expresses the positive aspects that have to do with nature.
When Josh talked about nature, he mentioned some of his hobbies such as hiking, watching sunsets, and going to the beach. One thing Josh touched on was the fact that he deals with a lot of natural disasters such as mudslides, droughts, and wildfires.
This affected his experience differently because he dealt with the aftermath of what nature gave him.
He talks about how these disasters happen when people don't take care of the environment. This shows how important it is for us to take care and preserve the environment any chance we get.
Everyone has their own way of experiencing nature, and that's what makes it so special.
Nature means something different to each person, and it could shape how we feel and how we connect to the world.
Nature can even connect things like culture or religion, since some people see the natural world as spiritual or linked to something greater.
Overall, our interviews and reflections show that even though we all experience nature differently, it still impacts us in important ways and reminds us to take care of the environment around us.
So that wraps up our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for listening to our podcast about personal experience in nature.
We are turning it over to Amelia and James to talk about religion in nature.
So there's a big fight at the beginning of Genesis that people will often bring up.
Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them.
Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. And God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth."
True, but that's only half the story.
Hello, I'm James Bruton.
And I'm Amelia Wolkoff.
And today we'll be diving into the topic of religion, only with an interesting twist.
That's right.
Before we get started, we're adding a brief disclaimer. I'm Jewish and James is Christian. So we're going to be focusing on religion through the two perspectives that we have experience with. This doesn't mean they're the only religions that interact with nature. We're just looking through this specific lens.
There is one common misconception people focus on when they think of nature. So we focus on the trees, the plants, and animals, all things that are, quote, natural, as we say. But we also have to realize that creation isn't just limited to the plants, animals, and wildlife that are around us. We are also creation. And by seeing that, we can take a greater appreciation not only for the natural things, as people say, but also for the people around us. Because we have to realize that everything on this earth is made by God. And with that appreciation, there should also be a respect not only for plants, trees, and animals, but also for the people around us. As God commands in Mark chapter 12, verses 30 and 31, we're supposed to love Him with all our heart, soul, and mind, and to love our neighbors, the other people around us, as ourselves. And He says, there's no commandment greater than this. And that's why you definitely have to realize that while taking care of nature is important, we're also doing it out of respect for our neighbors, our friends, all the people that God has created.
How I treat those around me is a direct reflection from the biblical worldview of how I treat God and His creation. Because we are called, for the Christian, we're called to love those around us, even our enemies.
This is Mr. Folk, a pastor at Victory Baptist Church in Reading, Pennsylvania.
We were called to treat people as if we were treating Christ. And how I treat someone is a direct reflection of who Christ is to me.
The other major thing about the Christian faith is that God called us to have dominion over all the earth, but not in the way many people think.
So when it comes to plants and animals, it's really important. We are called to have dominion, which means that we're called to oversee. We're called to not to rule with this iron fist, but to be good stewards, to be caretakers, to live in the creation that God made while serving Him and taking care of the things that He's blessed us with. So I think about when we see plants and we see animals and we see creatures, they are made by the Lord, and we're called to be good stewards of them, to be caretakers of them, and to enjoy them as a blessing from God.
Nature is an extension of God's divinity. It is not something that just exists. One of the biggest lessons that comes out of Judaism's views and traditions on nature is this increased respect for nature, specifically the creation of a Jewish value called Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam means to repair the world, and repairing the world is a focus of Judaism. The point of the Jewish people is to leave the world better than they found it and just keep moving forward and keep improving the earth. So in that way, it's definitely a great way to both worship God's creation and preserve what he's given us. It is the responsibility of the Jewish people to save the environment, protect the environment, and serve the environment. I have here today one of our guest speakers, Rabbi Alex. They're the Jewish chaplain here on Lafayette's campus. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
First, Rabbi Alex, can you give us a basic overview on the laws of kosher and animal welfare?
Sure. That's a big question. There's a lot of rules in terms of animal welfare. So there are a lot of rules about making sure that Jews are taking care of their animals often before their owners. But for example, making sure that before you go in and get water, you got to make sure that your animals have water. You need to make sure that they get a rest on Shabbat, which we would normally think of as just a human thing. It's the Jewish Sabbath. And you would think of that. It's just for humans, but it's also for animals too. There's also a lot of rules in terms of if you plan to eat animals. One of the common things you'll hear is talking about Tsa'ar Ba'alei Chaim, which means undue suffering to a living thing. And so it's actually a commandment that you can't cause things to suffer. The particular way that you kill an animal is making sure that it is doing the least amount of suffering was the impetus behind that particular practice. But there's a great example of if you're going to take the eggs from a nest, you got to shoo the mother bird away. Animals are animals, but they're also obviously they get some of the same respect because they're also understood to be created.
They're living, breathing things.
Breathing things, yeah.
For our final question for today, how can we further understand the obligation of Jewish people to take care of nature?
This idea of God supposedly telling the first people that it's your job to have dominion. And so an idea that dominion has less to do with sort of unfettered use of materials, and it has more to do with being judicious about being thoughtful about our use and thinking. I think conversations today about sustainability are very much part of how we think about it. Just as an example, right, every 7 years we have something called Shemitah, which is when you have to let the land lie fallow, right? You don't plant, you don't do anything.
You just let it rest.
And you just let it rest. And it's mystical and it's a lot of things, but I think at the end of the day, it also gets back to a really core understanding that you gotta take care of it. If you don't take care of it, well, you know. Well, we can see the effect of that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Rabbi Alex, the Jewish chaplain here on Lafayette's campus.
Looking at these two faiths, we can see how the way we look at nature is the way we view God. Nature is more than a forest. It's those with whom we share that forest. So by taking care of this gift to us, we are taking care of those around us.
The natural world is full of beauty and life. By expanding our perspective and looking at nature through the lens of religion, our respect for the earth can only grow.
Exactly. God gave us all of this earth to enjoy, whether it's the memories we make, the things we learn, or even the food we eat. God has always provided for us through his creation.
So whether you're Jewish
or Christian
or of any other faith, there is common ground on the fact that the world around us has been intricately designed by a higher power.
Through our faith, we can have a deeper appreciation for the world around us. God has and will always provide for his creation. The best we can do in return is manage what he gave us, one fallow field at a time.
Thank you so much, Amelia and James. It is truly fascinating to see how embedded nature is in our religions, especially with how God is correlated with the creation of humans, all the other animals and plants, and the land around us. In addition to religion, I'd like to introduce our next group, Casey and Jackson, who will be discussing how food and nature are connected. They will go beyond just the things we eat simply being a product of nature, and instead will be diving into food availability, whether it is natural or based on human activities, and how we can address it going forward.
I want to think about a family. This is a family of five. They live in the center of Chicago. Their apartment is very far from a grocery store. In order to go to the grocery store, they have to plan a whole day around going grocery shopping. For most people, having to reserve a whole day to go grocery shopping is just not possible. So this causes people like this family of five in Chicago to go to places like 7-Eleven or convenience stores. And when you go to these convenience stores, you're not getting a nutritious meal because that's not what they're meant to do. They're meant to give you a quick, convenient food on the go. It's not meant to be your entire diet. It's not meant to give you the nutrition that you need to survive. And so this often causes family like this one in Chicago to have many health issues because they're not getting the food and the nutrition and the vitamins and all the things that you get from food that you need. And this isn't a rare occurrence. Unfortunately, this is the reality for many people and many families in the United States. And this is often referred to as a food desert.
Hey everyone, I'm Jackson.
And I'm Casey. And in this section of the podcast, we'll be looking at nature through the lens of food. So what is a food desert? A food desert is when a community has low access to affordable food. And this happens for a variety of reasons. But before we get into those reasons, I want to make a quick clarification. According to Leah Pennyman, who is a founder, director, and program manager of Soulfire Farm, we really can't call food deserts food deserts. And this is because deserts gives the impression that they are a natural occurrence. However, food deserts are actually man-made. Whether intentional or not, food deserts are a consequence of human action. So instead of calling it a food desert, we should really refer to them as food apartheid. So from now on, we'll be referring to food deserts as food apartheid. Okay, so why does a food apartheid occur? A food apartheid occurs because of economic inequality, zoning, or the location, and lack of transportation. Food apartheids occur in low-income communities that live far from a grocery store, and far is considered 1 mile away in an urban area and 10 miles away in a rural area. And there are other possibilities beyond food apartheid. There's something called a food swamp. And in a food swamp, there are opportunities to have healthy, nutritious food, but there's also a lot of cheaper, unhealthier options like fast food restaurants that people tend to gravitate more towards. And this is a big issue in the United States, as 19 million people live in a food apartheid. That's around 6% of the U.S. population. And this can greatly impact your health with higher risk of obesity, cancers linked to obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and high blood pressure. We want to take this a little closer to home. We're going to talk about Easton, which is where Lafayette College is. Easton is made up of four parts. There's downtown, College Hill, South Side, and West Ward. Easton is considered one of these food apartheids, specifically in the West Ward and South Side parts of Easton. The city of Easton has actually been trying to combat this food insecurity through different methods, one of which is through a farmer's market. We're specifically going to talk about the downtown Easton farmer's market. However, there is another one, which happens in West Ward. This is the West Ward market, which runs from May through October and happens every Wednesday. So the farmer's market in downtown Easton is called the Easton's Farmer's Market. And at this market, they have produce, meat, fish, dairy, eggs, bakery items, flowers. Local businesses present some of their items. They also have beverages and other food items as well. This farmer's market occurs from May until the end of December, usually the last Saturday before Christmas, and they happen every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We went downtown to the farmer's market and talked to a bunch of different people. And we basically wanted to see why these people came to the farmer's market. What about the farmer's market that drew them out of their houses every Saturday and brought them here? And here's some of the responses that we ended up getting.
We've lived in Easton most of our lives, and she was actually born in Easton. So I just like the community, being around everybody, and the grapes. And our garden was the great place.
This is the longest continuously operating open air market. So that's in the country, older than our nation, 174 years. So that to me is very meaningful. But I love volunteering here. People from all walks of life coming here, supporting farmers. It's just a very meaningful experience.
I like supporting local vendors better than, corporate chains or anything like that. And just seeing the fresh produce, small batch sizes and everything, just I don't know. I've moved to Easton in May, and I've become here every Saturday. Just seeing the community and just seeing the vibes, it's really awesome.
After getting a sense of the general public's feelings toward the farmers market, we actually had the opportunity to talk to Emily Rowland. Emily Rowland is the director of the farmers market, and here's what she had to say to us.
Why is it important to have a farmers market in downtown Easton?
I would say it's important to have a farmers market in downtown Easton as mainly as a way to connect Easton, like local Eastonians, with the local food scene. You know, we don't have any super immediate farms within Easton. In order to feed a local population like Easton, we rely on a lot of local farmers outside of city limits. So to be able to bring them into a place where people can access their produce is really important.
How do you think the farmers market connects individuals to nature? And do you think they feel more in touch with their environment when they come here versus going to a grocery store?
Definitely. We're a rain or shine market, and sometimes we're even a rain, shine, snow, wind, sometimes sleet, like questionable precipitation. Like we're out here. The expectation that we're here for people all the time, like despite the elements, it does get people out of their house and like experiencing nature. So I think that immediate, like, I have to go outside to get to the farmers market connection is like, no. Yeah, of course, we're connected to nature in that way. But like, as Carrie and I have mentioned, like the freshness of the local produce, you know, you're getting to talk to the farmers who can explain a little bit more about like how that produce was grown, like how it's treated or how the animals were treated. And so just like those elements alone, like allow you to feel more connected to the natural landscape.
All in all, what we learned from going downtown is that the farmers market is a great opportunity for people to have access to more organic and fresh produce. And it's also an opportunity for them to go out and just enjoy nature itself.
Now, we'd like to introduce Professor Prabhu. He led a three-part project studying how local community gardens work beyond growing food. His team looked at whether gardens act as third places, where people gather, build relationships, and feel a sense of community. They focused on three sites in Easton, interviewed everyone from garden managers to longtime plot holders to volunteers, and explored what draws people to these spaces in the first place.
Would you be able to briefly describe the project that you worked on?
The bigger question we wanted to ask was, were these perceptions different between these three groups, right? So what we were interested in is trying to see how these different groups of people who worked with these farms perceived these places differently. So that was a big goal of the project.
What would you say is the biggest thing that you learned about food insecurity from this project?
One of the things we learned was sort of this bind between people who needed food and were experiencing food insecurity may not be the people who were the target audiences for the community gardens. As much as we wanted to be accessible for all kinds of people, it's only people who have the time and energy to actually use it who end up using it. Now, if you're someone who has two jobs, can barely afford to put food for your family and whatnot, you will not have the time or energy to go to a community garden and grow your own, right? So that was something we were sort of struck by in the whole project is, as much as we want these places to be places for food production that creates access for food and addresses food insecurity across the board, there may be an element of privilege where the people who actually use it may not be the people who really need it and are experiencing food insecurity. So I think that's something we were hoping to explore more in sort of follow-up studies.
Before we wrap up this section of the podcast, we want to go back to a fundamental question, which is food natural? And in order to figure out the answer to this question, we actually talked to the same people downtown and asked them, is the farmer's market natural? And here are the responses we got to that question.
Yeah, actually, because it's the river right here and the trees and everything. It was in the circle for a long time, too, but along the river is really nice.
Well, of course, the setting is beautiful with the confluence of two rivers, the Lehigh and the Delaware. So that's a very, you know, you're in that nature. But just supporting all of the farmers, the local farmers who are growing their crops and providing nourishment to the community, it really makes you feel part of that whole cycle of farming. The different, you know, vegetables and fruits coming out in the different seasons, which we publicize. We have peach days, apple days. And so that really keeps us in touch with what's happening on the farm.
Food really does help people get to know nature. And this is because in food apartheids, we can clearly see how dependent our communities are on food. Without food, there are a lot of issues that come up. This is why things like farmers markets are so important, because it allows us to bring the food back into our own personal nature. Speaking of personal nature, we want to talk about our own personal experiences with food as nature.
For me, food has always been tied to whatever stage of life I'm in. When I'm busy or stressed, I usually just grab something quick so I can keep moving. But when I slow down and relax, I actually notice what I'm eating and I enjoy it more. Some of my favorite food memories are simple moments like eating after a long practice or a long day, or cooking with my family. It makes me feel like I'm eating in less of a routine and something that kind of like anchors me in the middle of everything else going on.
Additionally, farmers markets and community gardens allow us to just be outside. And when we're outside, we get to experience all the things that are related to nature, like just looking at the trees, watching the rivers, looking at the blue sky, watching the clouds roll by. Therefore, food and nature are so connected that they really can't be taken apart. They are one and the same. Thank you so much for listening to our section of the podcast.